From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Test scores, teacher accountability, class sizes, what should be taught, what shouldn't. These are the issues that dominate education policy today. But the conversation is very different for those who opt out of the system. Homeschooling parents don't concern themselves with grades, textbooks, or even the day of the week. But they do worry about how to teach, about overscheduling their kids, and how to fit in the laundry in between lessons. Once an insular and fringy practice, homeschooling is becoming more fashionable and more popular. And today on the program, we're talking about the trend and why some parents are taking education into their own hands. Plus, the details on a new mobile unit to help the mentally ill. All that and your calls after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. GOP presidential hopeful Rick Santorum has brought more than his conservative values to the fore of public discourse. He says if elected, he'd homeschool his kids in the White House. Many homeschoolers, like Santorum, reject traditional school settings as one-size-fits-all factories that can't meet the needs of individual students. Others want to protect their children from peer pressure and bullying. Still others want to provide a religious or values-based environment 24/7. Today on the program, we're exploring the choice to homeschool and the mechanics of just how to do it. Joining me this hour, Dr. Bethany Gardner. She's a board-certified pediatrician who started homeschooling her children over a decade ago. She's also the author of the new book, Highlighting Homeschooling, and she joins me in studio. And Dr. Gardner, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us, Tonette Harris. She's been homeschooling her children for the last 18 years. She is currently the chair of the Utah Home Education Association, and she joins me in studio as well. Tonette, great to have you here.
Thank you.
Later on in the program, we're talking about a new way to help people who need mental health services. But first, homeschooling. Do you homeschool or were you homeschooled? What do you see as the upsides or the downsides? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. I suppose we should start with the obvious question of why. Let's start with you, Bethany. Tell us about your experience and why you decided homeschooling would be best for your two children and your family.
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a pediatrician, and I was a hardened career professional working in a pediatric practice and really had given no thought to homeschooling my children. When I had them, I assumed that they would be part of a traditional school system. However, I noticed a recurring theme in my patients as they came in. They were really feeling very squeezed by the box that traditional schools were trying to fit them and their children into, and they were complaining about the lack of a family-centric lifestyle, the inability to have time to do things that they wanted to do, and the fact that the educational alternatives that they were faced with were not the ones that they had thought would be the best for their children. And I started examining my own life and realizing that I was facing these same issues as well, and felt that homeschooling was really the way that I wanted to go with my children to try and build that family-centric lifestyle, have a superior education. And I therefore gave up my private practice and started working nights and weekends so that I could stay home and homeschool both of them.
That's a lot of work on your plate. I mean, to rearrange your entire professional life.
It was very difficult at first. It was a big transition for the family. But after we had gone through the transition time, I realized the benefits. I really couldn't even put a price on the benefits. We became much closer as a family. I felt that the children were really blossoming under the care that I was giving them. And they developed a passion for education and lifelong learning that I don't think is could be fostered as well in a traditional academic environment.
How did your friends, your colleagues, your family, your extended family, how did they react to this decision?
Well, in a sentence, they thought I was nuts. They couldn't believe that I was giving up a career that I had trained so hard in to stay home and educate my children. But as they saw the results and, just kind of stood by and watched through the years, now they kind of turn around and say, well, you did the right thing. But it was difficult. This was over a decade ago that I started. Homeschooling was not as prevalent as it is today, and not a lot of the support systems were in place that are out there today. Mm. So it definitely was a little bit of an uphill battle in the beginning.
Tona Harris, what were the factors that led to your choice to homeschool your four kids?
Well, most of my friends were, the friends that I made were homeschoolers, and so I thought, wow, I better check this out. So I did a ton of research at the library, online, and realized that I thought that would be something for my family. Did a lot of soul searching and realized that this was something that we wanted to do. I had my husband's support, and the area in which I lived had a good support group, and so it made it easy to go into that and start homeschooling my family.
I understand that your oldest went to kindergarten, a traditional kindergarten setting. I'm wondering how your kids reacted when you said you were going to homeschool them, because a lot of children like having to go someplace, like the social aspect, the playful aspect of a classroom. Were they old enough to put up a fuss?
Well, not really. She enjoyed it because her favorite part of kindergarten was recess and playing time. And so, because she had already started to read. And so she was bored with the schooling of the kindergarten, but enjoyed playing. You could ask her every day. It was always recess and dress up. And so when we brought it in home and she knew we were going places all the time with field trips, activities with the groups, there wasn't really much fuss.
Mm. Tona Harris is chair of the Utah Home Education Association. Also with us, Dr. Bethany Gardner, a pediatrician, also a homeschooler, and author of the book Highlighting Homeschooling. We're talking about homeschooling, and if you have questions or comments about the topic, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Tona Harris, do we have any sense of how many Utahns homeschool right now? It's growing in popularity. Do you have a measurement?
I actually contacted the State Department of Education. They have the homeschool numbers listed. It's 8,023. When I went through, there are many school districts that have online schools, and there's also the Utah Virtual Academy as well as other online. And these people also consider themselves home educators because they are schooling their children at home using their programs, and that actually increases our numbers by 4,200, which puts us at around 12,000.
That's a sizable number. Do we have any sense of the demographics? You know, paint a picture for us of are these super well educated? Are they not so much? Are they the traditional stay at home mom? What is going on?
I think they walk all gamuts of life based on the needs of the child and the families. Where some children may fit in. It could be because of bullying. It could be because their child has illnesses. It could be there is a whole spectrum of reasons that these families home educate. And religion is one of them, but it is not nearly as the most important one anymore as it used to be in the past.
I came across some data from the U.S. Department of Education. They say that in a survey, 36% of those surveyed said providing religious or moral education was the most important reason. 21% said they were most concerned with their child's learning environment. And 17% said they were dissatisfied with local schools. Do you think that is an accurate reflection of what we see here in Utah?
Wow. I think it's pretty close, but I think providing that more one-on-one attention to the children that these kids are not getting in a school, those are the types of experiences that I find when someone calls me to ask for their help and where to start. It's usually because their children are not getting fitting in with the mode of a public school and being able to provide the support that child needs to build their self-esteem, to know that they can do what they want to do.
Bethany Gardner, in the book, you kind of disregard the religious reasons of, you know, why a lot of parents do choose to homeschool. Why?
Well, I feel that people have all sorts of reasons for homeschooling. There are many people that do choose to homeschool for religious or moral reasons, but at the heart of the reason why they homeschool, it's because they want to provide something better for their children than the alternatives that are out there. And it doesn't really matter what they want to provide better. It just means that they want to provide better for their children. And that is the commonality that binds all homeschoolers together. Homeschoolers, you can just take a slice of society. We're neither more patient patient nor more creative than the general public. Some of us are, some of us are not. It spans all socioeconomic strata. It spans all ethnic groups that homeschool. So we really are very much a slice of society. So I think that everyone has their reasons, and most people can't point to specifically one reason as to why they homeschool. A lot of people have concerns about the family-centric lifestyle, maybe the religious or moral teaching, the fact that they're, the traditional schools in their area are not providing services that they need. So many people have a variety of reasons that are kind of all rolled up into one as to why they homeschool.
Let's talk about the financial considerations of homeschooling. Bethany Gardner, you mentioned you're a pediatrician. You gave up your practice. Many families today require two incomes to make a go of it. How did you work out the family finances part of this?
Well, it did. You know, as you can imagine, when I gave up my private practice, it was a blow to our income. But I find that you can homeschool really kind of on a shoestring, believe it or not. There are resources out there, whether that's through the public library system, online resources. The average family, I was doing some research on the web, and the average family spends about $500 a year homeschooling their children. And if you look at a family that has a child in private school, obviously they are spending far more than that on their children's education. But even parents that have children in public schools have to buy uniforms, and they have to deal with school lunches and fundraisers. So even people that have public education find that they have an outlay of expenses too. So it does create, you know, for the family at home that's living off of one income while the other parent teaches, it can be a stress. But on the other hand, you do not have daycare expenses or childcare expenses. And, you know, there are a lot of ways that you can save money.
Tonette, is that a concern that you hear people kind of poking around, investigating whether homeschooling is best for their family? Is just the money issue?
That's actually not one of the things that is most important for them. It's providing that environment for their children to teach them. It is a concern for some, and there are definitely single mothers out there, and so and single parent families who have to arrange and change their schedules, and there are a lot of resources out there that help. There is a lot of dual enrollment. People partake with those online programs that allow them to for their children to take these courses and help them in homeschooling their children.
We're talking about the growing interest in homeschooling and how to go about it. If you'd like to join our conversation about the trend or do-it-yourself education, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Homeschooling continues to gain popularity as yet another option in the mainstream education system, with the number of children being homeschooled increasing by about 7% over the past few years. Today on the program, we're talking about why many Utah parents are choosing to teach their children themselves and what it takes to homeschool effectively. You can join us if you like. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. With us this hour, Dr. Bethany Gardner, a pediatrician, a homeschooler, and author of the book Highlighting Homeschooling. Also with us, Tonette Harris, the chair for the Utah Home Education Association and a homeschooler herself. Let's go to the phones, and Chris is joining us in Salt Lake City. Let's see if we can get him on the line. Chris, hi. Chris, are
Hello.
You there?
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Hi. Sorry about that. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hi. My name's Chris. I was hoping to ask you a little bit about a concern of mine. I totally support the idea of trying to do what's best for your kids and your family as a stay-at-home dad. I realize the importance of that. But I do see public schools especially as having an important role in our democracy, allowing my kids to meet other kids from different churches or different walks of society, different backgrounds. And I worry that the increase in homeschooling is just one more thing that sort of tears apart at the chances for us as a country to kind of have a shared common experience, shared common goals, shared common morals. And I'd love to hear your comments about how you feel about the role of homeschooling in terms of bringing us together or bringing us further apart.
Dr. Gardner, go ahead.
That's a wonderful point that you bring up about teaching children diversity, tolerance of different viewpoints. However, I do feel that homeschooling actually leads to more tolerance and more diversity because you're allowing your child to learn about themselves, their family identity, their family values in the confines of their own home with the parents. And by the time that they are exposed to differing viewpoints in the outside world, they have a better sense of their self-identity. They have a higher self-esteem, more self-confidence. And I believe that they are more open to experiencing other diverse beliefs, ethnicities, viewpoints. Whereas the public school system pretty much assumes that all of that education is finished by the entrance to school at kindergarten. And by five, then they start educating on diversity and tolerance, which is fine for some children, but not every child is ready for that at that developmental stage. So overall, I believe that homeschoolers have a stronger grounding in their sense of self and family and community, and therefore will be more willing to experience diversity of thought and viewpoints later on. A study that was done recently showed that 98% of homeschoolers are involved in two or more significant social activities outside of their home, whether this is a scouting organization or athletic, fine arts, or whatever that may be. Whereas I think children in school, because of the simple constraints upon their time of the school day and homework and other things, do not have as much time or the ability to experience outside interactions as much. So while I think that's a perfectly valid concern and something that homeschoolers need to make sure they keep in their mind, I feel that homeschoolers overall are better prepared to meet the challenges of a democratic society than a traditionally schooled child.
Chris, does that satisfy you?
Well, a little bit. I see the friends that my kids are making at school, and I would have a hard time imagining us, you know, them having a chance to make friends with those kids just outside of school and have a chance to interact with those kids. It's something that's really cool that I see happening in my kids' school, and I feel like it's really important, and I worry that some parents, certainly not all, and I don't mean this as a disrespect to the guests on your show, but I do feel that some parents homeschool their kids because of a general fear of the rest of the country and the rest of the kids in the country, and I really worry for the direction of our country if that's the case, that people are sort of afraid of fellow Americans and trying to shelter, as opposed to, as your guest said, trying to give your kid a good grounding with which to go out and interact with society.
Chris, I appreciate the call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We're talking about homeschooling, the upsides, the downsides. Give us your thoughts, 801-355-TALK. Tonette Harris, I mean, that is one of the criticisms of homeschooling. You know, you're isolationists. You don't want to interact with anybody else outside the confines of your home. How do you overcome a perception like that?
Well, number one, they have activities that they participate in, like Bethany said. It's a great opportunity because when we do go out, my children are conversing with other adults. They are comfortable in that because they've been dealing with me as an adult. We have the opportunity to travel a little bit more. It frees us up so that we can travel, and the places that we go, it's the activities that we do. A lot of these activities that are out there for the home educators, put them together with other families. These support groups bring in a wide variety and diversity themselves of religious, ethnic, and backgrounds that help in developing that tolerance. I think my children have never had a lack of tolerance for anyone because of who I am. That is my own personal thing. We enjoy and embrace the world and the diversity and the differences of each other as well as those around us.
Probably the big question for homeschoolers, I would imagine, is this socialization aspect, not just exposure to different traditions and ethnic groups, but just, you know, how you interact with other people on a one-on-one basis. How do homeschoolers learn about group dynamics, about working with other people who don't have your same parents, who come from a completely different background? Dr. Gardner?
Well, it's a common misconception that homeschool parents keep their children in a box in the house and don't allow them to get out or do anything. But in reality, homeschoolers have to learn about group interactions with real-life consequences. We don't have to fight for supplies at a school table. There are more than enough scissors that will meet the needs for the children at our table, whereas in school, I think the group dynamics that children learn are a little skewed. There is an uneven distribution of resources, and the kids that grab the good working scissors first or the best crayons might do better, whereas in the home environment, those group dynamics are not there. However, there is give and take within the family. There are other siblings that need to be dealt with. There are perhaps a parent's work situation or volunteer status that might take precedence over a child's needs. The child is going to learn about how to, you know, deal with things. I might need help on my schoolwork, but yet mom has to go get the car repaired. How do we deal with this? You know, so I believe it's more of a real life interaction that homeschoolers get versus an artificially created environment that exists in traditional schools. You know, in traditional school, children are pretty much, they're placed in a grade based on their age, and they usually sit near somebody that has the first letter of their last name. And that's an artificial environment that does not exist in the real world, and homeschoolers are not placed in that environment. They have to function in the real world with their parents. So I believe that they actually learn those dynamics and those interactions more successfully than children in traditional school environments.
Anything to add to that, Tonette?
Well, I think we include them in every aspect of our life. So caucuses are coming up, yes, my children will go with me to that. So they get that education, that group experience. Everything that I do in my life, they're pretty much included. And so it's not just school that they're getting a real life experience.
Some might say, though, that this is the most extreme case of a helicopter parent. You know, you have to control every aspect of your child's life. How do you deflect to that kind of sentiment? Have you been confronted with that, Tonette?
Yes, I actually have. I kind of use the comparison because I believe every parent will do what's best for their family. And that aside, you have a child who is either going to put forth the effort or the child who is not going to put forth the effort, whether they're in public school or at home. At home, it's easier for me to work with that. I personally give my children the independence to make those children because we are each responsible for our own education. And that is something that my children are aware of. If they choose to learn or they choose not to learn, there are certain things they have to accomplish to progress. And I, as a parent, at least know when they have reached that readiness and can move on. And with them being able to take control over that and their education, it makes it easier for them to decide where they want to go and what they want to do and how far they can go.
Bethany, what do you think? Helicopter parent or just concerned parent?
Well, I think that this harkens back to my experience as a pediatrician. You know, from what I saw of patients and their families in my office, I feel that a lot of issues that children have were not being dealt with appropriately when the children were being sent off to school. They were separated physically from their parents for a large part of the day. They had other concerns of their time with homework and school things that had to happen. And a lot of the normal, healthy part of child development and family interactions was getting pushed aside because of these outside constraints. So I feel, actually, this is the pediatrician in me talking, that the one-on-one time, the close family interaction, I believe that's actually healthier for child development than the system that we have set up. That being said, I'm an attachment parent myself, and so I have found that homeschooling fits in very well with that type of parenting philosophy, but it also fits in very well with other types of parenting philosophy. So,
801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Speaking with Dr. Bethany Gardner, author of the book Highlighting Homeschooling. She's a pediatrician who's been homeschooling her children for over a decade. Also with us, Tonette Harris, chair of the Utah Home Education Association, homeschooler for the last 18 years. And you're welcome to join us, 801-355-TALK. And we'll go back to the phones. Tom is joining us from Salt Lake City. Tom, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, you know, it just seems like this whole thing is kind of thinly veiled anti-intellectualism. Like, it seems that homeschoolers don't want to teach their kids evolution or global warming or sex ed. I don't know if that's necessarily religious, but maybe your guest can comment on that.
Okay, Tom, fair question. So is this, again, avoiding certain uncomfortable topics that don't line up with your personal values? Tonette Harris.
Certainly we get that option. What I like to do, I've covered all those aspects with my children. They know about evolution. They know about sex education. They know about all walks of life because they are going to have to deal with all of that when they leave my home.
Bethany Gardner?
Well, homeschooling is legal in all 50 states, and it's up to the individual states to regulate what is taught and what requirements that they have. So a lot of those subjects that you mentioned, Tom, are mandated at the state level as to what needs to be included in the curriculum that is taught to children. So that really is a state choice that they can decide what is or is not mandated to be taught. I would say, though, that believe it or not, I think homeschooling is a little bit more on the intellectual side because you're teaching the passion for education and lifelong learning. Education, I think, for people in a traditional school is someplace else. You send your children to this other place for education. It happens only between the hours of 8 and 3, maybe a little bit of homework at the kitchen table, and that's that. Oh, we have free time in spring break or, you know, whether it's a summer break. For homeschoolers, education is wound into the very fabric of our life. There are not teaching times and not teaching times. It pretty much is a continual flow throughout our day. So I believe that those children that are homeschooled actually have a more exposure to intellectual pursuits. And I was doing some research. Colleges actually are very much recruiting homeschoolers nowadays. And some recent statistics of 2008 showed that for homeschoolers that have gone on to college, the average homeschooler GPA in the first year of college is 3.46, whereas the average GPA of a child coming out of traditional schooling background, whether that's private or public school, is 2.54. So other professors and other measures have rated homeschoolers about 15 to 30% above their cohorts. So I think that speaks to the creative thinking, the independent thinking, the self-direction that homeschoolers are taught in the home that then translates into pursuit of higher education goals.
Does it work for all kids, though? Because what if you have a kid who's got ADD? Can this person learn how to focus in an environment where there's lots of distraction and you're going places and there's no set times? I mean, you know, when you enter a traditional college setting or the workplace, you're expected to be there at a time and perform a certain duty and have a kind of focus. Can the homeschooling environment really, you know, generate that kind of person?
Actually, I think homeschooling is better suited to generate that environment for children that have special needs, whether that is a need of an environmental type where a lack of stimuli or certain things like that, or whether it's maybe an educational need of remedial work. Homeschoolers have the ability to tailor the education specifically for that child. And they it could be also on the gifted end of the spectrum, whereas children might need more work in a certain area. Whereas teachers, you know, I am in awe of people that are public school teachers. They do such a wonderful job, and they've got a large group of children. They have to meet minimum standards. They have to teach a certain curriculum. They don't always have the ability to customize specifically for each individual child. So quickly, parents will learn the learning environment and learning style of their children. And then you also have to take into account the learning and teaching style of the parent. And it usually takes a little while, but once you mesh those two together, you can find that the results that you have with the one-on-one teaching and getting rid of that one-size-fits-all mentality can be far superior to a classroom setting.
We're talking about homeschooling on City Views, 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255, if you'd like to join us. We'll go back to the phones. Gwen is joining us from Salt Lake City. Gwen, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just, in listening to this, I'm just kind of left with a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling. I know lots of people who have homeschooled their kids. They've gotten great educations. I know others that have homeschooled their kids and they've not gotten very good educations. But it seems that the implication from some of the comments of your guests is that our public education system is somehow unnatural and wrong and a bad place to put your kids. And I feel that our public education system has its faults and really needs some attention and some redirection and some reforming. But I also think that the implication that it's somehow, you know, a parent is putting their kid in an unnatural situation and that it's a bad place is not a very good, you know, thing for people to be left with. Not every parent can afford or can have the time or is able or competent enough to homeschool their kids, and I think we need a really good education system in this country that's for the public.
Gwen, thanks very much for the comments. I guess that does raise another criticism that homeschoolers have had to deal with, and that is you are withdrawing some of the best and brightest students from the public school sphere. You are taking out some of the most motivated parents out of the pool. So, you know, is the public school system bad, per se? Is it wrong, as Gwen puts it? Tonette Harris.
I feel that a parent's involvement in their child is extremely important. I am definitely for parental choice. For me and my family, it worked great. It fostered incredible relationships. It allowed me to take care of a child who is dyslexic. I think that you're exactly right. Your caller exactly right. Some people do not have the funds nor the time to home educate their children, and therefore they will do what is needed for that child. I believe there are excellent teachers out there that fulfill those needs, but you do come back to that number where there is a large number in that class, and not every need can be met. And that just goes without saying. But I think that the public school teachers do it the best that they can with what they have.
Bethany Gardner, was this a choice against the public school system for you, or was it for homeschooling? You know what I mean? There is a distinction there.
Right. Yeah, no, it was not against the public school system. I'm a product of the public school system myself, and I did not have necessarily any bad experiences that would have turned me off of having my children educated that way. I don't believe that a lot of people understand that the educational system that we have in America today is a relatively modern, in the 20th century, kind of a modern system, that the educational models were much different for a long period of time. So in some ways, I do feel that the model that we have come to in the public school system is not necessarily exactly where it needs to be. However, that being said, there are many children that are well served by the model that we have and that do extremely well. I don't think there's really any need, however, to withdraw homeschoolers from the educational debate in America. A lot of homeschoolers, like you said, we get criticized because we're pulling our children out of school. And, you know, many years ago that was said about private schools. You know, people are pulling their children out of public schools into private schools. But I think homeschoolers have a very unique place in the debate about education. There's nobody more on the front lines than we are with our children. And I believe that as far as advocating for child needs and the educational system as a whole, we have a lot to contribute to that.
Mm-hmm. 801-355-TALK is the number. Let's go back to the phones. This is Sherry calling from, I'm not sure where. Sherry, hello.
Blake. Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I homeschooled my daughter who was dyslexic, and because of that I was able to get her up to reading speed, and she's now in higher ed as a nursing student. I had other children that also were another daughter that was also homeschooled, but I also had children that went to public school, and they've all gone on to master's degrees or doctorates. So homeschooling can really work when you want it to.
Was there, other than the dyslexic child who needed some special attention, were there other considerations in your choice, Sherry?
Yes, I had been a teacher. I enjoyed and always wanted to. I was not brave enough with my older children, but I was with these younger two. The neat thing about homeschooling and teaching a child to read that has trouble is you have the freedom. Like, I could teach her for like 10 minutes and let her go jump on the trampoline and then come back 15 minutes later and work again. And because a lot of these children need that activity, you have options that you don't have in public school.
Hmm. I'm sure that you both would agree with what Sherry has to say. Tonette?
Absolutely. One of my children is a kinesthetic learner, so she needs to move. And she'd bounce on the ball. If she wouldn't have been able to move in that school setting, it may have labeled her as hyperactive. It was able to provide that opportunity to come to it, take care of the schooling, let them have a break, and adjust to their schedule and their needs.
Our time is short. This Twitter comment from at Utah Progressive, this lady on at KCPW City Views today is arguing the benefits of homeschool. I'm sorry, but homeschool kids are lacking in social skills. The next tweet, I understand the failings of our public education system, but you can't detach yourself from the world. It's a disservice to your children. Your response, Dr. Gardner.
Well, I don't think that homeschoolers are detaching themselves from the world. In fact, I think they are probably more involved than children in traditional school because they honestly have the time and the ability to do so. Statistics have shown over and over again that homeschoolers, once they become adults, they are twice as likely to be involved in a community, an ongoing community service in organizations than people that were not homeschooled. They do better. They score about 30 percentile points above traditionally schooled children on standardized tests. They do better in higher education. And I think it's because they're given this zest for education, learning, and life that carries through all aspects of their being, and it is not just in a classroom. So I guess I disagree that they detach themselves from life. And as far as the socialization, there are a lot of public and private school children that are not well socialized either. We're no different than everybody else. We're just a slice of society. So
a lot of strong feelings about homeschooling. I guess finally, Tonette Harris, is there still a stigma? It is legal in all 50 states now, but there is this kind of social stigma associated with it. How do you overcome?
It's always the first question that's ever asked. How do you what about socialization? And then I just give the standard reply as to what Bethany said. There are many ways to socialize your child, public school being one of them, homeschooling being one of them, with activities and church groups, scouts, classes, organized sports. So once usually I talk with people, that usually kind of falls by the wayside.
Tonette Harris, she's chair of the Utah Home Education Association, a homeschooler for 18 years of four children. And Tonette, thanks for your time today.
Welcome.
Dr. Bethany Gardner, a pediatrician, author of the book Highlighting Homeschooling, and homeschooler of two living in Provo. Dr. Gardner, thanks to you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, we're turning to another topic, a new way to help people who need mental health services fast. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. A psychotic break can land you in the ER or even jail, but Salt Lake County says there's a better way to handle mental health emergencies. Joining me now to talk about the county's new mobile crisis unit is... Hang on a second. Drop my paper. Julie Handel. She's the manager of recovery and resiliency for Optum Healthcare, which provides mental health services for Salt Lake County. She joins me in studio. Julie, great to have you here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Ross Van Vranken, executive director for the University of Utah Neuropsychiatric Institute. He's the administrator of behavioral health services for the University of Utah Hospitals and Clinics. And Ross, thanks for your time as well.
You betcha.
If you have questions or comments about mental health issues or available services, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Julie, I want to start with you. You're currently manager of recovery and resiliency at Optum Health, but you also are bipolar and someone who has needed some ongoing mental health treatment. Tell us about your life before and after your diagnosis.
Well, prior to my diagnosis, I actually had for many, many years experienced a lot of symptoms. And I had a feeling that, you know, the ship was not right, that there were definitely some very serious things going on with me that was becoming more and more evident over time. But I really resisted treatment because of the stigma associated with getting treatment. And then it came to a place where I just simply couldn't manage the things that were going on in my life. And I started when I would get very manic, drifting into, you know, not being able to be in touch with reality, psychosis. And so at that point, I was hospitalized and received a formal diagnosis.
So did you have a kind of mental health crisis that of the kind that this new mobile unit will be handling?
Yes, I did. I was taken to a hospital emergency department or emergency room as a result of a psychiatric and emotional crisis. And that's where my situation was handled. And an assessment was done there, and then it was determined that I should go inpatient.
Ross Van Branken, who currently responds to mental health crises? Someone who's threatening to harm themselves or others or whatever the situation might be.
Right now it's the police.
Okay, and how are they doing?
They're actually doing quite well. They have invested a significant amount of resource and time and training police officers, particularly in Salt Lake area, in terms of how to interface with people who are having psychotic or psychiatric emergency. And so they do a pretty good job. The difficulty is that there aren't many options. Either take them to an emergency room, or if they're really out of control or violent, they end up taking them to jail. And, of course, jail is probably the largest mental health center we have in the city right now. And there are a lot of people who don't need to be there.
So how is this mobile unit going to respond differently?
Well, first of all, anyone can call who has a concern about a loved one or something's going on, or they recognize somebody needs help but they won't go in and get help, and we'll be able to go out and be very proactive in terms of going out, having a conversation, providing some counseling, trying to set up referrals to make sure they get the right kind of help. And then from the police side, if they go out and their assessment is this is more of a psychiatric emergency, they're going to activate the mobile crisis team. We'll go out and try and help the police sort through it and maybe try and prevent somebody from going to jail or absorbing the extra expense and difficulty of going through an emergency room. We'll just take them right up to and admit them if that's what they need to needs to happen.
Hmm. How many of these kinds of situations are currently called into Salt Lake County? Do we know?
Really don't have a real good handle on it. We see at between the University Hospital and University Neuropsych or Uni, we admit about 40 individuals a month on these involuntary holds that the police bring in. There are probably another 20 that we're able to stabilize in the emergency room and disposition out to the community. So roughly between 40 and 60 we see. Some go to other hospitals, and we've tried to collect that data, how many of these folks are they bringing in. I think we'll have a better handle on that in the next few months.
Mm-hmm. But you do say that the jail is kind of where a lot of people end up, and it's probably not the right place for them?
Not the right place, and it goes too long. You know, I think what we want to encourage people to do now is call and get the help up front before it escalates to a situation where somebody's so out of control that the police, you know, they're aggressive, they're combative, and the police end up taking them to jail.
Ross Van Vranken, he is the executive director for the University of Utah Neuropsychiatric Institute, UNI. Also with us, Julie Handel, manager of recovery and resiliency for Optum Healthcare. If you'd like to join us, we're talking about a new mobile unit to deal with mental health care crises. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Julie Handel, describe sort of the makeup of the mobile units. Who's going to be on this team?
Well, first of all, I think it's been a really great collaboration of community partners. Optum Health made a commitment to the community that this was something that, you know, they had experienced working with, and then, you know, there have just been UNI, the county. It's been a really great collaboration, and the type of people that will work on these units, that they essentially will be made up of three individuals. They'll have a licensed clinical social worker or a psychologist. They'll also have a certified peer specialist. A certified peer specialist is a person like myself who has lived experience, but finds himself in a much better place than they once were. Mm. They've been able to get to a place of what, you know, we term as recovery. They're in recovery. And then they'll also have access, it's my understanding, and Ross can clarify here, it's that they'll have access to a psychiatrist, via telephone, to consult on these cases. And so it'll be a pretty diverse group of people that come at it from different positions, but certainly are working together and are very capable, understanding, and, you know, they understand exactly what these people are going through.
Hmm. Range of experience, Ross Van Vranken. So you've got all of these people coming to a person. You arrive on a scene. Kind of walk us through the process. What are the steps that you will take to calm someone down or to alleviate the crisis?
Well, actually, the therapist will engage first and try and make an assessment of what's going on. Try and get somebody to think through things a little bit differently and look at trying to create a plan. I think we'll use the specialists a lot in terms of trying to and they'll have to team it. In some situations, the specialist might be the first one engaged with whoever's having the difficulty. Because of that experience and that bond in terms of immediate credibility, look, I've been in your situation. I know what you're going through. I have the same kinds of things. Let's sit down and talk. Why don't you talk to the therapist here? Let's try and come up with a plan. Those kinds of things. So they'll team it. It will vary. I mean, there will be times when we perhaps send out two therapists and one specialist. There are times when we may send out two peer specialists and one therapist, depending on, is this a family crisis or is this more of a community crisis that's going on, or is it individual in a home? And it's going to vary. We have a crisis line. People will call. We'll get clinical information, try and get as much information as we can so we can determine what kinds of teams to deploy.
What if the person still refuses treatment? I mean, is that point that, is it still the options that we have currently? Go to the hospital or go to jail?
Well, all the therapists are designated examiners, which means they can commit somebody for treatment if needed. And so if somebody is a danger to themselves or someone else, they will initiate what's called a pink or a blue sheet, which is an involuntary hold, and they'll go to a hospital. If somebody's violent or they're threatening to kill someone or kill themselves and they get really aggressive, then they may end up going to jail. It'll just depend on the situation. I mean, we're going to opt for safety first, and if we get into a situation that looks dodgy, we're going to, you know, as where the police can call us in, we're going to ask for police backup in certain situations. But the idea is to stay with the situation as long as necessary until it dissipates. And that's the one thing we don't have now. Police, they're pretty busy. They don't have time to sit with somebody for an hour or two and wait for the crisis to really mitigate. And this we'll have that opportunity, particularly with this peer specialist, to sit with them, to continue to calm the situation, try and wait it out. And that's, I think, the advantage we have. Usually somebody, and if you think about it, just from a physiological standpoint, you can't stay in a heightened state of, you know, emergency, even in your own body, for more than a few hours, and you just can't sustain it. So that's part of what we're going to do. The other advantage we have is we'll be able to kind of check back with people, too, and use the peer specialist to kind of follow up and do some of that with folks.
Our time is short, but Julie Hartle, if you're in crisis, if you know someone who's in crisis, what do you do? Do you still call 911?
Well, I think it depends on, I think the best possible scenario is, you know, you have to make some judgments. I mean, if someone is has a weapon or something like that, then of course you're going to want to call 911. But if a person is, maybe experiencing some, you know, you can tell maybe they're experiencing some psychosis. They seem to be hearing things. They seem to be extremely paranoid. All of these different things. The crisis line. And I think
we'll give you that number. I'm going to have to leave it there. Julie Hartle with Optum Health, Ross Van Vranken with Uni. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.